Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Hey now, clones, welcome into the Daily Jungle. Great to have you here. Hope you backed it in, denimed up, and finished strong. We had a really strong show today. Three excellent interviews. In fact, Oakland A's first baseman Yonder Alonso told his amazing story. If you haven't heard that, you definitely want to check that out. Jungle legend Roy Mallorca has been coming on this program, talking junk and puck for 25 years, and he got nice. Cavaliers forward Channing Frye came in. The Spurs went into Houston last night. They punked the Rockets. James Harden wore it from you clones. We have all of that. Alvin's week that was might be one of the best we've had all year long, so let's get right at this thing right now. Alvy, go ahead and do what you do. I watched the Rockets get hammered in their own house last night. I watched that game from start to finish, and even this morning, I have no idea what happened. I really have no idea what happened. I mean, credit to San Antonio, and I'll get there in a minute, but how the hell do you show up like that for an elimination game in your house when the other team is without their best player, without their Hall of Fame point guard? And it's obviously not just that Houston lost. I'm fine with that. They got outclassed, they got outplayed, and they were outcoached by the better team. I'm fine with that. That'll happen. It's how they lost, which is so mind-boggling. By completely laying down and getting blown out and humiliated in their own building with the entire world looking on.
Rockets can't close out Game 5 in San Antonio and then get blown out tonight here at Toyota Center in Game 6, as the game is over, and so too is the season. The Rockets will head into the offseason following a great year that will be sullied by an unfortunate end to this particular playoff series.
Rockets Radio, good for him for saying that too. A great year sullied by the end of that series. Because Mike D'Antoni, and I want to talk about this too, but Mike D'Antoni was saying, look, we had a great year. We had a great year. We exceeded all expectations. It was an awesome year. Just had a bad night. Yeah, but can I tell you something? That awesome year is sullied by that bad night. That guy's right. All the raps against Houston that seemingly had been destroyed during the regular season. You know, the ones that said that they don't play any defense. Mike D'Antoni is not an elite coach. James Harden is not a great leader. James Harden does not step up in the playoffs. All those raps that seemed like they were dead after the regular season all came rushing back in one horrible night because of one horrible effort. Because Harden was not the only one who didn't show up last night. So again, Mike D'Antoni, who I think has done a great job, but he could talk all he wants about what a great year they had, how they exceeded all expectations. But that loss is going to stick to them forever and to every last one of them. And especially their MVP candidate, the Beard. I mean, exactly what the hell was that guy doing last night? I'll tell you what he wasn't doing. He wasn't competing. He wasn't leading. Hell, I'm not even sure he was trying. Have you ever seen a would-be MVP candidate less interested in being on the floor in an elimination game than Harden was last night? Or more passive in a big game? The best do play their best on the biggest stage, but last night Harden was at his very worst. I mean, one thing to miss shots, entirely another to not even take shots. One thing to play poorly, another to not even bother coming out of the locker room. And again, it was not just one really bad night either. It actually goes back to the end of Game 5, when Harden was 1-for-6 with 4 turnovers at the end of the fourth quarter and into overtime. And then he got blocked from behind by a 39-year-old man on a potential game-tying shot. And it only got worse last night, much worse. Their alleged MVP took just 2 shots in the first half. He had 2 shots last night in an elimination game. And then he was even worse in the second half, finishing 2-for-11 with 6 turnovers, 6 fouls, and the Rockets get blown out by 39. Well, they did keep it within 40, so they've got that going for them, which is nice. Hey, look, even though it's not the first time that Harden has no-showed in the playoffs, he is an MVP candidate. He is a top 5 player. He is the face of that franchise. So, I mean, I can't say how badly I want to give this guy the benefit of the doubt. I would love to say there's something else here. There is no way a player of that caliber would ever go into the tank in a game that important. This guy's got to be hurt. He has to be sick. There's got to be something wrong. There has to be some explanation for this. Because there was some guy out there with a beard and a 13-gamer, but there's no way that was James Harden. I mean, I so badly want to give this guy a pass. Because there's no way a guy that good could be that bad in a game that important. But he was. And he insists he was not hurt.
I really just didn't have a rhythm beginning of the game. I feel like I was making some passes and we just didn't, you know, knock down shots or whatever the case may be. But as a team, as a unit, we really didn't have a rhythm, and they capitalized on that. Everything falls on my shoulder. I take responsibility for it. Both ends of the floor, and, you know, it's tough, especially the way we lost at home for game six. But it happened, and now we move forward.
All right, so he owned it. He owned it. Good, he owned it. Now I need him to explain it. I mean, seriously, what happened to this guy last night? There has to be something there. Mike D'Antoni was asked about that and said only that Harden had been battling a cold. A cold would not explain that kind of meltdown or tank job. I mean, hit it with some vitamin C or some Airborne. Like, I've got no idea what this guy's problem was last night, but I do know this. It's going to stick to him for a long, long time. And again, it's not that they were beaten. It's how they were beaten. Not that they went down, but how they went down. By going right into the tank. I would never, ever wish injury on anybody, but I really hope this guy is hurt. Because if he's not and has no legitimate excuse for that performance, then his rep and his cred are going to take a terrific beating. I mean, there has to be some explanation for that. But he was tired. He had a cold. He was exhausted. He ran out of gas. I mean, give me something. Something to explain that. And then, of course, something that had to do with that, of course, was San Antonio. Spurs 114, Houston 75, and Pop is a wizard. I mean, a freaking wizard. Yonder Alonso is my guest. Yonder, really good to have you on. How are you?
Good, good. Doing well. Just, you know, just getting ready to have a great day. Hopefully pick up a W here in Texas and, you know, make it a fantastic weekend.
I love that. All right, Yonder Alonso joining us. You're coming off that win over the Angels, and you've won five of your last seven after a tough stretch in late April and early May. So what's changed for the team? Is it something in particular, or do things just start to click?
I think things are just starting to click. I think we're playing a little bit better defense. I think we're obviously pitching a lot better, and you know, bottom line, we've been able to score some more runs than the other team, and it was obviously a little bit of a grind on a road trip we just had about 6 or 7 days ago. But, you know, we've been playing well in Oakland. We've been playing well in front of our fans, and you know, it's been a lot of fun.
Now, they're starting to click, and then there's doing what you're doing right now. As I mentioned, you were named the American League Player of the Week. You went 9-for-22. You had 5 home runs, 10 runs batted in, 5 runs scored in just 6 games last week. So what's it feel like when you're in a zone like that, and is there a way to kind of put into words what that feels like?
No, not really. I mean, I it doesn't really feel like a zone. It doesn't really feel like you're locked in, you know, to be honest. You just feel like you're focused, you're in the moment, you're worrying about, you know, obviously getting a good pitch to hit, making sure your body's ready to fire, and, you know, just making sure you're ready to play. I mean, I take my early work very seriously. I get to the ballpark pretty early just to make sure that I'm completely prepared for a 7 o'clock start. And, you know, once the game comes, you just compete, and you really don't know or feel anything. You just feel like you're working in the moment, and you're trying to just get a good pitch and put a good swing together.
American League Player of the Week, Yonder Alonso, joining us. That's a great point right there. You just want to get a good pitch and put a good swing on the ball. You did work on some things in the offseason, and I know you said, quote, I want to make sure I'm stubborn and I see more pitches until I get one I can handle, end quote. I mean, that's definitely showing up in your numbers so far in terms of pitches per at bats. How challenging was it then to become more stubborn and make sure that you're hitting your pitch and not the pitcher's pitch?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, you know, everybody wants to get a hit. Everybody wants to drive that man in. But at the end of the day, there is a work that comes with that, and you have to look at the bright side of things and always making sure you get a good pitch. You know, it's funny, one of my hitting coaches here tells me when you look at guys on SportsCenter, you see them hit the long ball, and usually the ball's right down the middle. But usually you don't realize that it's a 2-2 count, a 1-2 count, a 3-1 count. So basically they've been working the count, and they've been getting their pitch. And then when they get their pitch, they hammer it. So for me, it's just making sure I'm really, really stubborn in my work, making sure I'm always committed to obviously swinging a good pitch, and hopefully, you know, I get lucky and put the ball in play and drive it.
You know, I got a couple of takeaways from that when you said that I have to make sure I'm always doing my work. And you've mentioned that a couple of times already. You got to get the work in. You also said something about looking at the bright side of things. I think it kind of goes back to what you've been through and the way you were brought up. You wrote an amazing piece for the Players Tribune a few weeks back. And yeah, the story is about you and your family defecting from Cuba when you were a boy. Can you take me back and talk about this? It was 3:30 in the morning in Cuba one day. Your dad wakes you up. He says, we're going on a trip, but you weren't told to pack anything, only to grab your stickball bat and get in the car. What do you remember about that morning?
Well, I remember, obviously, prior to those days, things were a little bit sketchy. Things were a little bit, on the quieter side. Remember my grandma at the time was obviously coming to the house every day, and my uncle as well, my cousins as well, and it was kind of weird. One night they just woke us up, and I used to have my t-ball bat that I would carry around with me everywhere that my dad got for me, and he just said, hey, we're gonna go take a little trip. We got in a car, and it was like a 58 Lada, so it's a Russian made car, and basically drove about an hour or so to the field, and got on the plane and left. It was pretty dark. Just a few, of our closest family members there. And then, which never got to see again. They passed away. So that was a rough one. But, that's basically it. I mean, it was not a cold night, but definitely a misty night. And, it was just a very sad, sad day, obviously, for my family. But obviously knowing that it was going to be a happy day when I got here. And, then afterwards, I obviously talk about it in my article saying how, it was going to, people think it's an easy, once you come to the States, it's easy and you're going to have everything. But at the end of the day, you can have everything you want. You just got to work for
it. Clones, let me talk to you for a minute about Ferguson. Ferguson is the nation's largest distributor of plumbing products, but their playbook goes deeper than plumbing. Pro contractors know to depend on Ferguson for the best in waterworks, HVAC, and facilities maintenance products in the game. Ferguson has over 20,000 knowledgeable associates always working for you. Combine that with Ferguson's 1,400 locations and 24/7 online ordering, and you will always have the home team advantage. See why the pros pick Ferguson at Ferguson.com today. That's Ferguson. Now it's back to the Daily Jungle. Yonder Alonso joining us. Yonder, it was nothing easy about that. In fact, you land in the airport in Miami, and after being questioned and a lot of paperwork, your family's told, welcome to America, but you have no bags, you have no possessions, you have no money. You literally have nothing but the clothing on your own back and your t-ball bat. And your father, who'd been a baseball player in Cuba, people knew him there, but he's in a country now where nobody knows him. He doesn't speak the language, and he connects with the one person in Miami that he does know. And he spent a few nights at this guy's place. Your dad gets a job at a warehouse and a tiny home for some rent. What do you remember about those first few days in America?
Man, it was rough. It was rough, really rough. I mean, maybe two meals a day if you were lucky, maybe one. A lot of work, a lot of unclarity. We didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know our next move. But, my dad worked. My dad, he got after it with my mom as well. And then next thing you know, we moved into a little office apartment type place. Me and my sister would sleep on the couch, and my parents were in the bed. We had one TV it was a TV VCR put together. They used to sell them at Sears. I remember getting that and pretty much spending my afternoons either playing baseball or watching some TV, trying to learn some English. And, after that, we went to school, tried to obviously learn the language, which was pretty difficult. And then just try to get better and get better and move on with life. And my parents were always trying to achieve the American dream and buying a house and, obviously having all the stuff that we could possibly get. And, a lot of credit to my parents. They always, if they wanted to buy a piece of clothing, they wouldn't buy it just for us to have maybe an hour of study hall with somebody that can teach us the language or whatever the case may be. But, school was a main priority for us, and obviously afterwards baseball and amongst the other things that any kid, likes.
Yonder Alonso, my guest. Yonder, I want to be very clear about this, too. Your father, I mean, just working hard and then just doing what your father and mother did. Your father worked at a warehouse, but that was not enough to pay the rent, so he started a second job as a baseball instructor, then a third job as an umpire, and then a fourth job cleaning office buildings on the weekends. Your mother was working two and three jobs herself. You'd see them in the morning, and then you'd go to school. And there's this amazing story that your father would go to McDonald's when they had 39-cent cheeseburgers. He'd buy about 20 of them and put them in the fridge so he'd have cold cheeseburgers for a week. So you grow up and you're an excellent baseball player in high school, and then in June of 2005, Minnesota drafts you in the 16th round. That meant you could have been a pro player. Your parents could have, well, they could have stopped doing the kind of work they were doing, but instead they tell you not to sign and then go to the University of Miami on a baseball scholarship. I mean, it's such an amazing sacrifice for them to make because it meant another 3 or 4 years of cleaning for them. I mean, why did they tell you to do that in that case?
Well, you know, I think they saw the brighter side in things, and they saw the long-term in things, and they obviously, you know, I'm from Miami. A lot of players have the chance to do play professionally, and you know, once they come back, I would always hear how tough it was. And, you know, there's nothing better than having a degree because I would always stay by your side no matter what. And the Minnesota drafted me in the 17th round, 16th round. And they weren't offering a type of income that I can say, hey, mom and dad, you're not going to work for your life. And, you know, you're not going to be living paycheck through paycheck or anything like that. You know, we're still going to have to be grinding. We're still going to have to be working lots of jobs for us to maintain the rent and all the things that are going to happen in our lives. So for me and for my family, it was very easy to just basically go to school for 3 more years, get as much as I can on my degree, finish my degree, and then, you know, my next step will be professionally if it's there. So that was kind of an easier move because they knew that, you know, they can sacrifice 3 or 4 more years and hopefully the brighter side will be that I'll be, you know, playing professionally somewhere and things will be on the brighter side.
All right, so that makes sense. But at the same time, when you were playing college ball, you would still come home and work on the weekends to help cover their bills. And then all the
Absolutely.
Work pays off, right? And then after your junior year, you're selected by the Reds with the 7th pick overall. What do you remember about that moment and what did it mean to sign that first contract after everything you and your family had been through?
Oh, man, it felt like the monkey was off my back. It felt like I can actually, you know, help them out. I felt like, you know, my whole life was owed to them and all the sacrifice that I had to obviously overcome and obviously do, you know, all the hard work and all the things. It just felt nice to be able to put a smile on their faces and understand that, you know, I was going to have their backs and I was going to help them out. And you know, obviously, for me, my mentality didn't change. I knew that there was a bigger goal for me, and obviously, I also get to the big leagues and improve as a big leaguer as well. But definitely, for that time and that at that moment, I felt like it was definitely a blessing for me and my family.
And then it happened, September 2010. You're called up by the Reds, and your parents and sister fly up to Cincinnati. The four of you were able to share in that moment. And again, after all right. that, what was that day like, and what was that moment like for your family?
Oh man, it was a it was a dream. I mean, it was a dream. It was something that I've always wanted to do. You know, it was put on a big league uniform, and right before the anthem, my parents come down the steps, and they get to see me wearing a big league uniform in a big league field, and obviously facing a big league team on the other side. So it was just it was an incredible moment. I know my dad's face and his eyes. I mean, I can just think about it right now, and it's like it's happening in front of me right now. He was so happy and just very proud, and I felt the proudness of him and obviously myself and my whole family, how much we had to sacrifice, and you know, it was all for a good cause and then obviously a good moment for us in general.
You know, I think a lot of people listening right now, I think I speak for a lot of people. When you hear a story like that, you know that you're capable of so much more and you want to be so much more, and you have to understand and appreciate and respect family. So now you're married and you have a son now, so does that give you even more perspective as to what your parents did for you and your sister?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's an incredible feeling when you have I have a 17-month-old right now. And obviously, when I see him every day, all I can think about is my dad and all the things that he did for me and, you know, all the things I'm going to do for my son. So he's swinging a bat right now, his little T-ball bat. And I'm just thinking about how I used to do it. So it's a great time. It's a great time for me and my family. We're blessed and we're just very thankful for all the opportunities we've had throughout our life.
Roy Mallacher is my guest. Ram, it is great to have you back. Roy, how are you?
Oh, Romy, always look forward to this time of year. I couldn't agree with you and Eddie O anymore. This is the greatest time of the year. Triple Crown's going for him and you, and hockey for us. And you like both you guys are talking puck, and it's a great time. And this one is unbelievable because you've got The best storyline, I think, in a long, long time is going on right now.
Hey, Ram, before we get into this, and I'm glad that you got me right into it, you mentioned Eddie O, Eddie Olczyk. I got to ask, Ram, you and I have been doing this now for a quarter of a freaking century. A quarter of a century. And it is May. It is the conference finals about to get underway. But I got to ask you first off, how's life for you, Ram? What's going on? How are things?
Well, I could have a different kind of a championship tonight, Jim. We're at home here in the Erie Insurance Arena. We're playing the Mississauga Steelheads in the Ontario Hockey League. We're up 3-1. We've got over 1,000 standing room already. It's going to be a real exciting game here tonight, and it would be a real great way for me to add something to my career that I certainly never have had, and that's a junior championship.
I mean, it would be huge. That is some big-time hockey right there. You're up 3-1 in the OHL Finals, Game 5 tonight. Hey, Ram, one more thought before we talk about the NHL. I mean, you've done this at the very highest levels of the sport. What would winning tonight or winning a championship with this group mean to you?
I love these kids. The passion, the respect, the way they conduct themselves gives you a whole new relationship with the way these kids come up. It's not about money. It's not about fame. I mean, what they do in the community and with the kids is absolutely incredible. And I've just really enjoyed watching it and being part of it. And as I said, I think a year ago when we bought this team, Jim Waters and I got together and put, you know, this concept together. I said, what a great way to end my career. 28 years in the NHL, 10 years in the American Hockey League, and now these kids. And it's actually surpassed my anticipations.
Good luck, Ram. I know it's a huge night for you. Good luck with that. Hey, Ram, one thought about
Thank
the
you.
Kids. One thought about the kids. You know, over the course of the season, Roy, whenever I had an NHL coach on the show, we always end up talking about the new generation of players in the NHL, guys like Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine, guys in their late teens, early 20s who are coming in and they're making an immediate impact. You're seeing it firsthand in the development process. How do you explain these players who are so young yet so prepared for the NHL?
Well, you mentioned Connor McDavid. He was a 3-year captain here with the Erie Otters, and two of his best friends, Dylan Strom, who was taken third overall by Phoenix, and Alex DeBrincat, who is going to be another Paul Kariya for the Chicago Blackhawks, are still texting him on a daily basis. And it's kind of cool that Connor came back in the semifinals to see us play against London, and they still all keep in touch. It's just the way they breed, and I love seeing the kids from junior hockey come up because of what they've gone through and the sacrifices they paid. And I think they play with an edge, a real edge in their game that of determination.
Roy Malacher is joining us. All right, Ram, Pittsburgh beat Washington in Washington in Game 7. In your opinion, Roy, how much of that win for Pittsburgh was about talent and depth, and then how much of that was just mental toughness, experience, and grit?
Oh, I'm not going to go for the depth because they got too many guys out. Too many guys are banged up. Their original number one goalie's out. Trevor Daley can't play. The best defenseman they have in Letang, he's lost for the whole year. And we all know, I mean, concussion protocol, whatever. Sidney Crosby's not right. And look at the guts he gave you the last two games. What a leader. And he got really good production out of Kessel and Malkin. Two guys who've been maligned before and who stepped up but have a resurgence like Marc-Andre Fleury. And I was very happy for him, too. So when it went to 7 games and everybody was going, well, Washington's going to do it this year. You know, I have no dog in the race. I said, I don't know. Pittsburgh in 7 games is going to be pretty tough to beat, and they were.
Roy Malacher joining us. So what is it about Washington? I mean, they simply cannot get over the hump. How much of that blame do you put on Alexander Ovechkin, and why is it that they cannot get over the hump? And you knew it would go like that again.
Well, they had a great goaltender. Hopi has been a great goaltender this year and last year. They've got guys like Backstrom, TJ Oshie, who I think is a five-star player. You know, that's top shelf. They've got a good supporting cast, a great defense. Getting Shattenkirk was brilliant. You know, I don't know what happens, but it's just something that isn't there when it comes to crunch time, and it wasn't there again. I mean, 3-0 in Game 7 in your own barn. I don't know.
Roy Malacher joining us. He's a jungle legend. He's a partner and the COO of the Erie Otters in the OHL. They're playing for their championship. So, Roy, you got Pittsburgh facing off against Ottawa starting tomorrow night. The Penguins are carrying some injuries, as you point out. But when you see how unreal Marc-Andre Fleury was for the Penguins in Game 7, how much confidence do you think Pittsburgh has going into the series?
Oh, I think they're sky high. And they, as you know, except for, I guess it would be my second to last year, Crosby's rookie year is the last time Ottawa has beat them in the playoffs. So they know that they can win. It's in their brain that they can win. Having said that, Martin wasn't there then, and they didn't have a few more guys that are absolutely playing out of their mind as a tandem. I mean, if you know, and you've watched a lot of Anaheim, if somebody told you that Bobby Ryan would block 5 shots in a game, would you believe them? And that Ryan Turris is having a great year. You know, there's MacArthur hasn't played in 2 years with a concussion. He comes back and gets 2 game-winning goals already. Stone and Hoffman are nothing but goal scorers, so don't count them out. They can skate. Very well coached. Boucher's done a great job there. Very well coached. So I think they're going to give them a game. I don't think they'll beat Pittsburgh, but I think they'll give them a strong series.
All right, Ram, you mentioned the Ducks, so let's talk about that before you go. Washington was not able to get over the hurdle. The Ducks did when they ended their tough run of Game 7 losses. I had Cam Fowler of the Ducks on the show yesterday, Roy. He was saying that they were well aware that that was a topic, but they felt like the losses had become experience that would teach them how to win a Game 7. Now that they've done it, how dangerous are the Ducks going forward?
Well, all you got to start with is Getzlaf and Perry. And when you got those two horses going for you, like they did in 2007, they could just carry your whole hockey club. And other guys like Kessler, Cogiano, and Vermette could come along for the ride. And Gibson's given them some pretty good goal, too. Not as steady as he was during the season, but he's given them some pretty strong games. So they're going to have to rely on Gibson being a more steady goalkeeper. And, you know, ride Getzlaf and Barry as far as you can. But they got a problem because the team that they're running up against is playing better than anybody else. They have the top 3 tandem defensemen in Ryan Ellis and Roman Josi and P.K. Subban in the entire NHL. They're mobile. They can crack you. They can give you an unbelievable, relentless forecheck. And they've got 3 lines named Joe, with the exception of Mike Fisher, of course, who can all score. And every night you go, who got that national goal? And it's somebody different. Well, when you get this far, Romy, you're all well coached. So that's just being redundant. But this national team, Pekka Rinne has a 1.37 goals against, .951 save percentage, 2 shutouts, leads everybody in the league in that category. And when you got great goaltending, not good goaltending, great goaltending, that gives you an added plus.
Ram, you have lost nothing. You have lost nothing, Ram. You are dialed in. So when it's all said and done, when it's all over, who do you think is going to hoist the Stanley Cup this year?
Here we jeopardize the streak. I've got 5 in a row and 8 out of the last 10. I'm going with the Nashville Predators.
Nashville, how come? Bottom line, how come Nashville?
Pekka Rinne and those 3 defensemen I mentioned, and the fact that look what they did to the Blackhawks. They beat them 4 straight, and they gave up all of 5 goals against the Chicago Blackhawks. A lot of people would have picked them to win the Cup before the series started. I think that this is a team playing better than anybody else, and they're committed to going to the net. They have, as I said before, a relentless forecheck, and they create all kinds of havoc in the other team's end.
911, what is your emergency?
Oh, yeah, what's going on? Welcome to the program. I am Jim Rome. What do you want to talk about? Lots of things coming off this weekend, and I've got a ton of show for you, so start dialing. I want to start with the Jungle Karma. Yeah, I said it. Let's start in Louisville because there's probably no better example of the Jungle Karma than what happened in the 103rd running of the Kentucky Derby this weekend.
Yeah! Always Dreaming has won the Kentucky Derby!
Tom Pleasure, the trainer of Always Dreaming. Good luck on Saturday.
My pleasure. Thank you.
It does not discriminate. It does not lie. It's real.
How about Billy? Here he comes!
Billy Hamilton, great job and really good to talk to you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I appreciate the time.
I guarantee it. Tim Layden is my guest.
You know, it's like Krzyzewski gets all the best players at Duke. Calipari gets all the players at Kentucky. Pletcher is the number one, two, or three trainer in the country, and he's going to keep going to the Derby, and he's going to win a bunch more.
Matt Holliday joins us.
What's up, Jim?
My man, I know how hard you work for this.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Sorry about this.
Not at all,
man. It's been a bit of a long night.
Sparrow, way to stay in the fight. You're still a real guy, right? You're not an actor.
Definitely a real guy.
Wah! I just hit him with a live wah. Xavier Coleman is my guest. I mean, you've gone from open heart surgery only a few years back to now playing for a spot in the NFL. How do you explain all this?
I really just can't. Life has treated me well.
I might have hit the ground five or six straight times. I'm not the one that likes hitting the ground.
I don't think anybody likes to be put in the ground.
That's
just part of that glorious playoff tradition of complaining to the officials to get calls for the next game, especially when you're headed back home. My old man used to make me listen to jazz in the car and make me crazy. One day I was going to open up the door and just roll out of the car like Bourne. The old man's taking the long way home.
No! Count Basie!
For the first time in their
Peter Laviolette. There's something amazing going on in Smashville.
The loudness that comes through from the fans. It's a crazy, crazy special place.
What is that, Jimmy? I mean, really? That's pretty lame. Where are you at, living under the dirt?
Although I could have run him 5 seconds in, but I want to hear the entirety of the call. Matt Carpenter.
There was also that small glimmer of hope, that burning desire to keep playing.
Shark porno. Who sees a shark and thinks, man, man, it's about to get really nice. Clones, I'm well aware that Billy Joel turned 68 today. I just don't have any idea what that's got to do with anything at all. I have no idea how that pertains to me or this program, regardless of whether or not he accidentally drove into a house at one point.
Reaper shot swatted by Ginobili.
Four rings in a 15-year NBA career, and one of his finest moments ever occurring at age 39. Mad, mad respect, Manu. Mad respect.
Thanks a lot for having me back. Hi to everybody listening.
All the smack-off callers, you'll compete against Manu. Grow up. Get to the gym.
We're talking to Buda Baker. One of the criticisms that came up about you is that you don't necessarily have an ideal size.
I just say watch the film. I always feel like film sets you free.
Man, who is that on the other end of the glass hacking up like that? Jeez, Alvin, what the hell?
Dude, I got mucus.
You guys hear that grinding? Is somebody like jackhammering next door? You know that door that normally squeaks? We're having ourselves an open, yo.
Well, first and foremost, I don't know who it is, but it isn't me.
It is the off season. I become the lead detective on this hunt for the humper. Go Law and Order SVU. On this smiling, plump, naked shark pimp.
San Antonio people, please quit drilling on top stage.
Shut your punk ass up, son.
Hey, Jeff, do me a favor. Call back when the WNBA season tips off.
I'm extremely embarrassed by my actions. I apologize.
Baseball
to
needs to be his top priority, and clearly it has. All this guy has to do is sit in the dugout, chew a few sunflower seeds, talk a little junk, and when they throw over to first, go back! All good things do come to an end. Thankfully, my Stanley Cup prediction streak is not one of those things. I've got the Pittsburgh Penguins beating the Caps in the second round. Look, I don't know everything. There's some things I know nothing about. I know playoff hockey.
Congratulations on your pick. You are like Karnak.
We're joined once again by Dana White.
This has nothing to do with Mayweather's side. I plan on having this thing locked up by this Sunday and then moving on to Team Mayweather and starting negotiate with them.
Connor's side done by Sunday and then move on to Mayweather, or you're just going to move on, period.
Correct.
You're joined by Ducks defenseman Cam Fowler.
We just kind of kept telling ourselves that this was a new year and all the stuff in the past, you can only use that as experience. I thought it was one of our better games of the playoffs.
Kind of vehicles involved?
In Rolls Royce.
Is that really the type of vehicle that's involved? Or?
It is.
Lives are more important than cars.
You know who always says that lives are more important than cars?
Ms. Parker?
People who drive terrible cars. And this guy would keep leaving me notes. And then one day he started drawing diagrams. Bro, believe me, I don't want to be dinged any more than you want to be dinged. I can't center this thing any better than I am right now. Yonder Alonso is my guest.
People think, you know, once you come to the States, it's easy and you're going to have everything. But at the end of the day, you can have everything you want. You just got to work for it.
We're in the locker. Who do you think is going to hoist the Stanley Cup this year?
Go with the Nashville Predators. Look what they did to the Blackhawks. They're committed to going to the net, and they create all kinds of havoc in the other team's end.
Yep. We're going to Montana today. Yep. And then we're going to Florida to put our feet in the sand.
What in the hell kind of job is that?
I take responsibility for it.
Maybe you ought to go back to that Kardashian chick.
Why? The Kardashians suck the life out of every athlete that come near them. Channing Frye.
My mom, like, come to school and sneak me, you know, teriyaki chicken on the low so the other kids didn't get jealous.
I knighted him now. He's nailed to some bitch.
What?
Beard, how about you grow some nuts? Stay out the clubs.
I don't think he's a coward. He's a choker.
Hendrick Perkins goes on television. Najee Davenport goes in the hamper.
Kerfuffle. I mean,
what is that
for? Games. Two, three.
Ghetto Gandalf.
Of course he did.
What is that?
You're the wizard of the window.
Sucking on each other's tailpipe.
Dirty, like I don't respect them.
yelling on the phone.
Lick a window.
Have a nice day, and thank you for having me on your show.
Good night now!
Channing Frye is my guest. First, you wrapped up that series against Toronto on Sunday, so now you're in a position where you can kind of rest up, recover, and get ready for the conference finals. How valuable is it to have that kind of rest at this point of the year?
I think it's huge. I think, well, number one, we have the oldest team in the NBA, and I think for us, mentally, you know, getting a chance to decompress, to really focus on the little things. And so each series, you know, regardless of, you know, how many games it takes for us to win, we learn something from each round and each team doing something different. So we get to work on that, not only as a team, but as individuals to see what other teams might do. And it's preparing us for the next round. So we're just, you know, watching. There's been a lot of great series, you know, going on. And so we've been just enjoying this time, you know, and just not so much relaxing, but resting, active rest.
Active rest. Cavaliers forward Channing Frye joining us. Now, in game one against Toronto, you had 5 points, but then you break out for 18 points in 18 minutes in game two. So is game one of a series kind of a feel-out game, or was that a clever strategy on your part? Did you sucker them in and sandbag them and then just impose your will on the series?
No. I just think, you know, different teams do different things. I think in game one they have a good game plan. And then from there, it's a little bit easier for the guys coming off the bench, especially in our team, to adjust. You know, game one, I don't know what Kevin, LeBron, and Kyrie's stats were, but they're probably astronomical. And so for us coming off the bench, you know, especially in that second unit with ours, we kind of have to figure out, you know, who's going to get most of the shots in that group. Usually it's a choice between, you know, Bron's going to get his shots, and usually teams pick between, like, me, Kyle, or Darren. And I think Kyle may have had 4 or 5 threes that game, or maybe that was game three. But and then I think Darren did pretty good that game. So they stayed with that unit. And I think they went really small in the second half. And then in the second game, they put Valanciunas on the bench, and they went with a bigger guy in the second lineup. And so that kind of worked for me. And I just took advantage of it. But, you know, with all the vets we have on this team, you're going to see guys' numbers go up and down, except for the big three, pretty much. And everyone else just kind of just got to take advantage of other teams' mistakes.
Channing Frye, my guest. You know, Channing, last year was simultaneously an amazing year for you on the floor in terms of winning that championship, but so extremely difficult for you away from the court. In October, you received word that your mother's cancer had progressed, and you rushed back here to California to be with her, and she passed away the next morning. Can you talk to me for a minute about what was your mom like as a person and what kind of an impact did she have on you?
Well, you know, my mother had a huge impact on me, of course. She was always the one that always gave me the option. My dad, you know, I was really tall growing up, and my dad loved sports, and he was just like, you know, basketball in school. And my mom was like, you know what, Channing, you could do anything you want to do. She had me in Boy Scouts at art camp doing it. You know, I was in the band for almost 6-7 years. Just she's like, you always have options, you know, don't feel like you have to do anything you don't want to do. And I think my mom inspired me to, you know, follow your dreams and to take all that negativity and to just fuel the train, you know, make it move forward. And, you know, both my parents were extremely loyal to a fault, you know, and they, you know, taught me what it was like, to be part of a family and to, you know, now that I have my family and my own, I just appreciate the little things. And I think everything that they sacrificed for me to get here is continuing to fire me up and to make sure that I'm appreciating every single day that I'm here.
Well, it's continuing to fuel the train and move it forward. What a great line that was. But Channing, the fact is, if that weren't devastating enough, then a few weeks later, your father passed away on Thanksgiving. I can't even imagine what something would be like to go through something like that. How were you able to get through that? And then maybe what kind of a role did your teammates help you in dealing with your grief?
You know, I think I'm still kind of dealing with it. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I think the biggest thing that I learned when I had my heart scare a couple years ago was that you just got to breathe, man, and you just got to, like, I mean, the more you fight it, the worse it gets. And so some days, like, you know, I said this, I did the, like, Players Tribune thing, and I just said, literally, some days going into practice, I'll just lose it, you know, just missing them. And I'm okay with that, you know, and some days are better than other days. I mean, we're in Toronto, and, you know, I don't ever pay attention to the dates or anything like that, but, you know, Mother's Day is coming up, and for some reason, out of the ordinary. It just, like, it crushed me, you know, and that whole day was kind of, it was kind of a crappy day for me, but I just kind of, like, breathed through it. I continued to talk to the friends and family, and, you know, my teammates have been there for me by always trying to lift me up. I think everyone sees a lot of how they always, like, kind of pick on me. It's like a whole team of bullies. But, you know, for me, it's just like I'm not the youngest, but I feel like I'm the everyone's little brother in the sense of, like, just getting new to this whole winning championships thing. And, you know, everyone's just been great and supporting me and making sure that I'm smiling and always joking around. And you know, they know how much basketball means to me and what it's done for me in my life and the opportunities that it's given to me. And I really take it as, you know, my parents, my dad never missed a game, man. It was absolutely amazing. You know, he would take time off work, even if he had to do extra, to watch me play. And so, you know, he just goes, you know, just always appreciate this because it can be taken away, you know, at a drop of a hat. And, you know, for me, every time I'm out there, you always see me, you know, smiling and enjoying myself, even in the thick of it. Just, you know, even if I'm sitting on the bench, just, man, this is an amazing life that we live. And people around the queue know that, like, whenever they ask me how I'm doing, I said, hey, you know, life can't get any better.
You know, it's such great advice, too, Channing. Like, and when it's not great and when you have one of those days, you just breathe through it. You just breathe through it.
I mean, at the end of the day, okay, I don't have a good day playing basketball. I'm going to drive home. I'm going to eat good. We're going to live good. And other stuff is going to happen. I get another chance to do it tomorrow. So, you know, it's an amazing sport that we play, and it's an amazing thing to be a part of something that I'm a part of. And I don't want to ruin it by being grouchy over missing a couple shots because, you know, I know that it's going to get better tomorrow, and it's something that I can work on.
And not only that, if you lose a parent, and I'm my own two cents worth, I lost my father in 1992. You know how this goes. You never get over it. You try to get through it, and if you're strong, you probably do get through it, but you never get over it. I right. speak from experience, man. Years and years and years go by, you still have those bad days, and that's nothing right. to be ashamed of or apologize for. That's life. That's normal. That's natural. You breathe through it.
Definitely. It's you know, but again, it you know, I think you know, the more people you're around that continue to love on you, it's easier. Those ups and downs become less and less, not like mountains, but more like, you know, rolling hills. And, you know, just that type of emotion just shows the relationship I have with them. And I appreciate that, you know, and they're always, you know, sometimes I've dreamed about some of the things that I used to do, about how my dad almost fought a referee or my mom, like, you know, would come to school and sneak me, you know, teriyaki chicken on the low so the other kids didn't get jealous. You know, just little things like that, man.
Houston. Jerome in Houston. Jerome, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing fine, and thanks to the Vine, Vance Mack. Long time, first time. I've been listening for 20-plus years, and this is probably the second worst day of my 40 years in Houston. The worst was that debacle in Buffalo in 92, and the Oilers went up there and blew that 32-point lead. But you know what? At least the Oilers played a half. This, the thing that happened last night, what in the hell, Harden? You don't even show up? How about you, D'Antoni? Why don't you get in somebody's grill? Somebody coach. Is he the coach? Then coach. Somebody, a fan or somebody, get up in somebody's grill and say, get off the tarp, losers. Don't quit now. You're representing the whole city of Houston. What are they doing? I'm so upset, Jim. I've been bathing in a pile of barbecue and baked beans to soothe the pain. And later, when I get off work, it's going to be a little Jack and a little beer chasers. I'm telling you, it's so disgusting to be in one of the greatest cities in the U.S. and have to put up with this year after year. And then in the years when we have won a championship, we hear, well, if Michael Jordan would have been there, yeah. So I want to know, what were you doing in the huddles last night, D'Antoni? Talking about your off-season plans? Yep, we're going to Montana today, yep. And then we're going to Florida to put our feet in the sand. What in the hell kind of job is that? I tell you what, I'm disgusted with this team, disgusted with Harden. Maybe he ought to go back to that Kardashian chick that he had last year. Maybe that turn it around. I'm out.
My man, Jerome in Houston, freaking rack him. Bubba. What's going on, Bodie?
What's up, Bubba?
What's up, Bubba?
Hey, man, who's the new call screener? What's his name?
That's Adam Hawk. How did that go for you?
Oh, man, I'm going to knight him now. He's nailed to some bitch because he's beautiful, man. He's like
when I first called, he was like, do we like him? I was like, hell yeah, y'all like me, you son of a bitch. And after that, and we was just hitting it off over the phone while I was waiting.
Wait a minute, buddy, walk that back. Did that some bitch say, do we like him? You heard him say that?
Yeah, he said, do we like him?
Oh, man. Hey, listen, Bodie, you're a made guy here in this jungle. You know that, Bubba. So let me apologize for the sparrow. He's trying hard. He doesn't know any better. He doesn't know everything about the show. He obviously doesn't know about you. Of course we like you, Bubba, but it sounds like the two of you guys worked that out, right? He's now a some bitch, and you're good with him?
Hell yeah, that's a good term, in my opinion, being called a some bitch.
All right, good, man. I'm glad you guys are good. All right, so what else you got in your mind, Bodie?
But look, this is Jerome. Come on, man. Jerome, I've been watching hard since he was with Oklahoma. And he's the biggest crybaby. It's like your kids played baseball, right?
Of course they
do,
yes.
When your kid comes in the dugout and there's a kid that got a curve. And then that kid tells all the other kids, he's got a curve. That's the same thing on a bigger scale with Harden. As soon as he started crying about fouls, everybody started crying about fouls and it got in their head. And what is this? Bringing up the ball that damn slow? You're getting the defense a chance to set up for you. That's why you need a point guard. I've been saying for years they need a point guard, and I ain't never been on Harden's bandwagon. He ain't showed no heart. In the last game before this, San Antonio crushed them in the third quarter. They went straight to the hole and got up, and the Rockets just disappeared. And that's why they won that overtime game. I don't know, Bubba. I'm sick, man. I'm just sick of people falling for this crap. I ain't never been no kind of Houston fan. My last favorite player was Billy Paltz. Rack me, Bub. I'm gone.
Rack him.
Rack him.
Let's find out. Vadi in Pasadena. Vadi, nice to have you back. What's up?
Rome, what's up, guy?
What's up, dude?
Hey, I want to talk about the New York City heartthrob. Not Kyle Brandt. Matt Harvey is back on the mound tonight. Say what you will about that whole kerfuffle. Dude went melancholy. But at least Harvey got dumped this year. Did you see Kevin Garnett's Area 21 halftime show this week? Kind of bizarre, right? Kendrick Perkins was griping about the Ray Allen breakup from 2012. So let me get this straight. The Celtics traded Perkins in 2011, but dude is bent that Ray left the team as a free agent a year later. Jim, after watching that clown show, now when I think about the 2008 finals, it won't be the Paul Pierce wheelchair stunt or Sasha crying on the bench or Sam Cassell throwing up all those bricks. The first thing I'm going to think about now, Perk, going on national television a decade later, whining about Shuttlesworth like a spurned lover. That's a great look. Well done, Ken. Is he just jealous that Ray hit one of the biggest shots in history? You remember the shot, Jim. Heat fan hitting the exits, trying to beat traffic. It wasn't our year. So apparently Kendrick Perkins is heartbroken, and everybody handles heartbreak in their own way. Matt Harvey goes on a bender. Kendrick Perkins goes on television. Najee Davenport goes in the hamper.
That's not a good call. No. Hey, thanks for dropping that hammer on the same day. The same day that he said that.
Not a very good call.
Mike in Indy showing up under the wire. Mikey, what's up?
Hey, not much, Romy. True story. I called in. Someone picked up the phone, but it was just silence. Finally, I said, Hawk, is that you? Still silence. Then I said, man, put me on the phone with Rome. Now here I am. I know I'm a big deal, Hawk, but damn. But what's the world coming to with D1 head coach Jim McElwain out here dry-humping sharks on a boat? I wonder if he rubbed some castor oil on that thing first for maximum performance.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call. Like that
Mikey.
Not a very good call.
I know Eric Spitz would not be happy with that. It's a good day, right? In fact, we had an amazing week. Thank you very much for checking in. I appreciate you. Hit subscribe. If you haven't done so already, tell a friend about this and trust the podcast. You have an amazing weekend. Check back Monday. See you then.